Those who are visitors with us, and if you're visiting with us, I want you to know that somebody loves you an awful lot. That they would stick their neck out and invite you to come and hear me preach, because they probably heard me preach, and so they sure do love you a lot to invite you to come and to be here. We're just going to look at the Bible. We believe that people should go back to the Bible. We believe that to be a Christian, you have to go by the Bible. And so we're trying to point people to go back to it and to look at it more carefully and to study it and do what it says, because one day, Jesus said in John 12, verse 48, we're going to stand before God and we're going to be judged by the words that He spoke. And so it's not going to be our opinion or what our preacher thought or what some school or some religion of men thought, but what does the Bible say? And so we want to look at the fourth chapter this evening, Proverbs, and talk about that a little bit, and to try to appreciate, as we look at this chapter, what the principal thing of life is. When you look at the Proverbs, each chapter, it seems to me, tends to lend itself toward a certain direction about something about life. And I've given the chapters, each chapter, something that deals with that that I haven't exposed yet. But we need to see that the principle of life, listen as the writer tells us, just skim through this chapter. And notice we've seen this quite a bit, but just to look at the fourth chapter of Proverbs in verse 4. Here's the father speaking, telling about his own father, and said, He taught me also, and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Verse 10 says, Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. Verse 13, Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. And then, Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. And then verse 21, it says, Let them not depart from thine heart. Keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. And John is right. We're going to look at the heart some here tonight and talk about that a little bit as some of the principles that guide and govern and why we should put these things into our heart and keep them there. So we cannot please God, good people, without God's perspective of things. We've got to see what God says and listen to God. You can't make me happy unless you know what it takes to please me. And the same thing is true about God. And this book is emphasizing the value and the significance of listening, listening, and listening. One of the problems people have always had, it seems to me, and we see even in the New Testament, in James, the first chapter, in verse 19, we're told to be swift to hear and slow to speak. And somebody has said, God gave us two ears and one mouth, and we didn't get it. You know, we kind of wish we had two mouths and one ear. We like to talk a lot. But if we can learn the value and the importance of listening so we can see what God has to say, He's going to tell us tonight that there is something in life that is the supreme thing, the principal thing. Listen to what's said, if you will, in verse 7. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get understanding. So we want to talk tonight about the significance and the importance of getting wisdom. We know, all of us know, that it's not really, I shouldn't say it that way, but you can accumulate information and you can learn a lot of things and memorize things and still not have the ability to know how to use it. And so we, in our world, what we do is we value somebody that has a lot of information. But the Bible actually values the person that has the information, but then also has the ability to know what in the world to do with that information, how to use it properly, how to apply it properly to get the most benefit out of it. And so it's good to know what is true and what is right. But it is also, good people, valuable that we learn how to use that and have the skill to master life. Wisdom is the ability to master life. We looked at the faces or the facets of wisdom. And we said that there's a lot of things we can see, terms that kind of overlap each other, but help us to see when a person is wise, you can detect that in a person because they make right judgments, they try to do what is right, they think about the future, what they're doing. They have insight into things and know the solutions to problems. And so their character is such that they behave in the right kind of way. And they know how to treat other people and talk to other people and all those things, because wisdom, good people, is what is the toolbox that we need so we can hammer out in ourselves the kind of character that God wants us to be. In the world we're living in, the world is trying to crush us and destroy us and work against us. And so we've got to be strong. And we've got to have these qualities so we can be what God wants. We said the first chapter talks about the building blocks. How the Lord, in verse 7 of the first chapter, we must fear Him. We must listen to our mother and our father, verses 8 and 9. We must make sure we choose good peers, verses 9 and 10. And we must make good choices about life, because if we don't do that, the consequences will be tremendously evil. If we want small consequences of destructive things in our life, lay these principles in place, and then the evil consequences will be very small as you live. We said you've got to do the work. You've got, if you want to be wise, you've got to have the will, the desire to want to know what is right. You've got to speak out with your mouth and ask people to help you. Seek counselors and people who know things. Search for the information by digging out and trying to find it. Those three conditional statements with 10 active verbs. And the Bible says, when you do that, then and only then will God give you what you seek and what you look for. And so we said that really, well, it's just telling us in the third chapter, as we looked at it, the fundamental principles about the priorities. What are we going to put in the core of our life, in the heart of our children? We need to put these qualities of trusting God, fearing God, honoring God, receiving the correction of God, and putting our confidence in God. If you put that in the heart of a child, and you embed in the mind and the thinking and the heart and the core, the word heart in the Bible is talking about the emotions and the will and the constitution of a person. When you put that in the core of a young person's heart, and that gets in there, and that young person grows up thinking, that's what God wants me to do, that young person will know what life is about. They'll know the essence. They'll see the value of it as they go on. And so they need to take these qualities. This is what the nature of life is about. And we need to try to get those qualities in the heart of young people so that we can get them to get on the right track early, because we said the devil wants to mess you up while you're young. He knows when you get to be where I am, he'll have a harder time with it, because you've probably got your feet on the ground and figured a few things out. But when you're young, you don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. Not only is it that you don't have all the pieces of the puzzle, but you don't have the experience yet. Your parents have been down the road, and they know, they've experienced it. And one day, you're going to get down the road, and you're going to have to look back. And we want you to be able to look back and say, I'm glad I knew those things. I'm glad I had the ability. And we're not saying these things to make anybody feel bad. If you've made mistakes, or if a parent, you haven't done some of these things, as a child, you've made mistakes, we're not saying this to make you feel bad. We're saying this as preventive information so you can step up to bat today and say, okay, I'm going to start living that kind of life. I'm going to let God govern my life in every direction. Whatever I do, whatever I think about, I'm going to try to figure out what God, because God, good people, not only will give you these blessings, you know, James 1 and verse 5 tells us to pray for wisdom. And in Proverbs chapter 2, we're told to work for it. And it's really like what the Bible teaches about Jesus saying in Matthew, the 6th chapter, pray for your daily bread. And then in 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10, if a man won't work, neither shall he eat. And so you've got to pray and you've got to do the work. And when you do that, God will give you the guidance and the protection that you need in your life. So let's talk about getting tonight the supreme thing. Let's talk about that a little bit and talk about the byproducts of what it is when we get wisdom. What are the byproducts? This chapter is going to show us some of the blessings about that. And what it's really saying is, by it being this principal thing, if you notice the King James, the way that is spelled, some of the modern translations don't have that phrase in it, but it really is a good translation of that term. It's the idea of reaching for what is at the very top of the ladder. If you think about what the book of Ecclesiastes teaches and talks to young people, it talks about somebody, the phrase is used, vexation of spirit in the book Ecclesiastes, which really just simply means to chase after the wind. I tell people, when I was in grade school as a young boy, I can remember I was always kind of a nutty person. I liked to do crazy things. And out in the schoolyard, there were three big walls on the school building. And the wind in the fall of the year would get there and start whirling around and make kind of like a little whirlwind in there. And the leaves would blow. And so the young children there had learned, that they saw me one time get there and chase around in that, acting crazy. And so when it would start doing that, they'd say, Gary, chase the wind, chase the wind. And I'd get in there and I'd run around in those leaves, run around that wind. I was acting like I was trying to catch the wind. Of course, they would all roll on the ground laughing at me. And after a while, I'd finally get tired and sit down. And I can remember many times as a young child sitting down there, wore out, and getting a little dirt in my eyes from doing that, and looking at my hands and thinking, you know, you cannot catch the wind. And the writer of Ecclesiastes is saying, if you chase after the wrong things in life and you run around here and you leave God out of your life, you're going to end up with dirt in your eyes. And at the end of life, your hands are going to be empty. You will not have any. You can't catch the wind. So let's don't chase after life. Let's figure out what life is about. I mentioned this last night and I had this chart mixed up. I told about a fellow in a university that took a glass cylinder and he filled it up with stones. He put these big rocks in it first. Then he asked the children if it was full, and they said no. He poured pea gravel down there and shook that down around those big rocks. All that pea gravel, bucket of that got down in there. Then he said, is it full now? They said, well, pretty much. Well, then he poured in a bunch of sand. He shook it and made that sand go down there. And he says, is it full now? They said, yeah, now it's full. He said, no, it's not full yet. And so then he poured a bucket of water down in there. But then the thing became full, and he said, now listen, could you put the big rocks in if you'd put all those other things in first? He said, you've got to learn about whatever you do in life, figure out what is really important, and put that in life first. And then everything else will have plenty of room. You'll have room for all the rest of it if you get the important things. And so that's what the writer's trying to help us to see here. We've got to make the first things in life the first thing. And once we do that, good people, we'll see that we won't think that money's the most important or fame's the most important. We won't think that education's the most important or success or career. What we realize is what is really important in life is that I have the ability to see how to master my life because I've only got one life to live, I've only got one soul to lose, and I've only got one chance to get it done, so I need to figure out how to do it. And so the writer tells us that that is the principle, that is the supreme, that is the chief, that is the top of the rung of the ladder. If you want to reach for something that is of real value, it's more than silver and gold. It's worth more than rubies. Now you think about that. If I were to tell you tonight, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $1,000, you know. Would you like to have $1,000? Or would you like to sit down for a while and learn to have wisdom? Which one would you choose? Well, I think most of us say, well, no, that's a pretty tough one there, you know. That's kind of hard to decide. Well, that's because we don't realize the byproducts and the benefits of what wisdom does. So children, teach your children the value of wisdom that comes from God. And I told my children, Ecclesiastes says, wet the edge I forgot how that verse is stated now. I think it's the 9th chapter, verse 9. The idea of sharpening the axe, wet the edge before you cut the wood. That's how it is. And it's the idea of taking an axe and sharpening the edge before you go out and start working with it. If you get the axe real sharp, it doesn't take near as much energy, near as much work to cut wood. And I tell people, I've chopped wood with a dull axe all my life. I don't have a very sharp mind. But get your mind sharp. Learn everything you can learn. And do good with what you learn. The Bible's not condemning us for getting an education and getting the best out of that. I was telling these young people back there a minute ago, I said, if you're going to college, make sure you get your money, or get your parents' money's worth. What I should have said, some of you, get their money's worth. And so learn everything good you can learn, but also in the process of learning good things, figure out that the supreme wisdom is the key to it. What God says about how to live and what's important, no matter what any educator says beyond that, that's the most important thing about life, is to figure that out. And I could tell you a lot of funny stories about people that I know that they're... I'll just tell you one example. Somebody told me, a fellow that worked down at NASA at the space shuttle down there in Florida, and he moved up north to Boston and was working up there, and they had a snowstorm. And he had a pretty good driveway, and he looked out their house across the street. And this fellow, who was a genius at mathematics and all sorts of other things, was out in his driveway shoveling his driveway with a dustpan. And he spent the day using a dustpan. Now, I'm not trying to insult anybody in that, but I'm just saying we should have more wisdom than that. We should figure out that there's a better way to go about something, and for people not to think that if we're not nutty, but they'll think we're nutty if we do things like that. So we need to be on guard. And so where will children learn what to build their lives on? Well, they're not going to learn it probably in the universities or in the schools today. We need to see that where they're going to learn it is they're going to learn it at home. And how will they learn where to stand? How's that going to happen? Well, mom and dad are going to have to get busy and teach their children what is the principal thing. Now notice the writer's going to tell us that what we've got here, and it's really kind of simple when you think about it, is there's only two ways to go in life. And the writer, look how the writer explains that down there in verse 18, if you will. He says, the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more onto the perfect day. Here's a picture of life, good people. And you can live life in one of two ways. You can either go toward the light, and the light will get brighter every day, and you'll see more clearly what life is about. As you get older, it becomes more and more clear. Or you go away from the light, and you go toward the dark. And the further you go toward the darker it gets. I tell people, when I was a boy in the country, we had the outhouse was kind of over the rise of a field back behind the farmhouse. And, of course, the outhouse was a long way from the house for a good reason, if you know what an outhouse is. And we had an old porch light on the back of the house. And sometime in the middle of the night, I'd have to go out there to use the outhouse. And so I'd go up that rise, and I could see everything around me, the porch light shining on that rise when I was going up the way. But once I got over the rise down the other side, I couldn't see anything. And I can remember many times we had apple trees and fruit trees out there. And sometime, it probably was an apple would fall out of the tree in the middle of the night. It would hit the ground, and I just knew it was a tiger, a bingo tiger, or a lion or something. And so I'd run back to the light. I was afraid because I couldn't see. I didn't know what was after me, what I might be in trouble with. I wanted to be in the light because I could see the comfort and the joy of what was going on because I could see that. And so the thing is, if we walk toward wisdom, we're walking toward the principal thing. But if we're walking away, we're walking toward the Bible, what the Bible referred to as darkness, which the Bible really illustrates as wickedness. And so we need to see, good people. We've got to decide which way we're going to go and where can life be found. Well, we just looked at those passages a moment ago and saw where the writer shows us. And think about the fact that the direction you're going affects your vision. Have you ever thought about that? If you go toward the dark, you know, I've got a lot of illustrations. I was in India years ago and I had a flashlight. They call it a torch over there. And I took this torch and stuck it in my Bible, and there were no lights around. I was using this flashlight to read my Bible with, and you can always hear something being eaten over there when you're somewhere. And so we could hear something gnawing on something over there in the bushes. And I said, "What is that over there? Where everybody's hearing? You're all kind of looking that way, you know." And they didn't know. Nobody knew. So I took my torch and I stuck it inside of my Bible and held my Bible around it. And I shined that light over there. And there was this big, gigantic rat eating on something. I don't know what it was, but he was gnawing on something. And he wasn't intimidated by the light or us or anything. And I said, "Now we know. We don't have to be afraid." And that's the great thing about the light. If you turn the light on and shine it around where you're going, you can see what's there. You don't have to be intimidated. You don't have to be afraid. And if you walk toward the light, the closer you get to it, the brighter it comes until it dawns on you like a perfect day. And so this chapter just shows us, good people, what we've said, that what is the consequences of that? Your life is the consequence. You're going to lose life. You're going to lose who you are. You're going to throw what you were designed to be and what you were intended to be in eternity. You're going to lose all that if you don't listen to what God has to say. So it's critical that we see that in these commands, in these words, are resting the power of life and death. And if we could think about it that way, we might say, "Well, maybe I'll give that a little more consideration because I may kill myself. I may destroy myself because I don't listen." So this needs to take place, young people. It needs to take place in the home. Parents need to see that's what we need to teach our children, what they need to learn so they'll know how to go out in the world and make decisions. And so listen to verses 1 through 4. He says, "Hear, ye children, the instructions of a father, and attain to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, let thy heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live." And notice the father saying, take these principles and put them in the seat of what you're all about. The heart is the seat of the human emotions, the human will. Put these things inside of you. He said, "Now let me tell you, I was a son, and my father did this to me." And so what we're seeing here is that what a father's supposed to do, a father's supposed to pass down everything he can. When my sons were younger and growing up, I decided that I was going to teach them everything, and I went out and learned about things I knew nothing about and learned how to do those things just so I could teach my sons. And there's a man at Madison, he's a builder, and matter of fact, my sons worked for him when they got up in high school. And he said to me one day, he said, "How is it your sons know how to do everything?" And he said, "My son doesn't know how to do anything." He said, what in the world, why is it that way? I said, well, let me ask you, what did you do with your son? He was growing up. Did you take him on the job with you when you did that? He said, no, he got in my way and got on my nerves, and I wasn't patient, so I took him back home. I said, well, everywhere I went when my boys were little, if I went to work on somebody's plumbing, my sons went. Now, I said, it cost me extra money. It took me a lot more time. And many times we didn't get the job right because they were there trying to help me and trying to learn how to do it. And I said, it wore me out many times. But I said, I lost a lot of tools and a lot of other things happened. But I said, they learned how to do because they were there on the job. And I said, that was my wife knew when I was going to go work on something. I didn't dump the kids on her and me go do what I want to do. They went with me. They were boys. And I wanted them to know how to do plumbing, electricity, how to build houses, how to work on cars, how to paint cars. I want to know how to do everything that I feel like a man ought to know how to do. And so I'm saying that fathers, whatever you can pass down to your children, learn everything so your children go out in the world and they don't have to spend all their money hiring somebody to do everything that needs to be done. Let them know how to live in this world. Teach them how to do that. Here's a father that did that. He taught his son, and his son learned. Well, did I skip that too quick maybe? That his son didn't learn that well. I don't guess we'll go back to that. And so we need to see in the homes where it begins, in those formative years when they're young. You know, it's amazing how those first, you know, about 2 to 5, it's amazing how much a child learns. It seems to me when you get those principles set in that little bracket down there, it just stays with that child as they go along the way. You don't wait till they're 13 to start trying to tell them what time to be home or what to do. I tell people that I did all kinds of things with my boys that I think stuck in their mind. I drove down to Texas in an old beat-up van and went to some lectures down there 1 year. And then I drove all the way over to Florida and got down there, went to a school, and I said, now, boys, get out here and walk around over in that sand lot and walk over by that river and look around and walk around these buildings. And they said, why, Dad? I said, you're going to go to school here one day. I said, just get in your head, if Dad pays the way, this is where you're going to go to school. I said, just plan on that. Now, it was amazing how as they grew up, they said, we know where we're going. And they never thought no more about that. And so I put that in their head early, you see. And I tell fathers, do that with your children. When your little daughter's small, tell her one day you're going to want to date some boy, but you're not going anywhere with any boy until your dad interviews him and talks to him and tells him what the rules are. Now, if you tell her that when she's that big, when she gets up bigger, she's going to think, well, that's the way it is. Now, if you want to take me out, you got to talk to Dad. And I've said to dads, what dads ought to do is take a ball bat and write some rules on it, you know. Rule number one, keep your hands off my daughter, you know. She's not your wife. And just turn the bat and read to the boy before he leaves, you know, and let him know. And so you just have to, you train your children. If we do more training, good people, we'll lose less children. We end up spending more time in discipline because we haven't spent the time in training. And if we could ever put the emphasis on training, and now even my grandchildren, I'm doing my grandchildren the same way I did my children. When they come around my house, I tell them, listen, I don't know what the rules are at home, but you're at grandpa's, and grandpa's got rules, and if you break the rules, it will be painful. And I said, there'll be consequences suffered from it. But I said, if you do what's right, we're going to have a great time. And I said, I'm going to let you choose how we're going to have fun or where we're going to have trouble. It's up to you. But you see, we have to teach and train these children so they'll know what to do. Pass on, fathers, what you know about life so your children can know how to live. And so this chapter just shows clearly the responsibility of a natural father to educate the children at home. In those years when you have the ability to do that, teach them the practical skills that they need to learn so they can grow up one day, so they can be a father. I want my sons to send down the road what I've given to them. And so fathers must pass on to their children what they know, what they've learned. Now notice something else we see here. Look at what verse 5 says. Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth, forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee, love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor. And when thou dost embrace her, she shall give to thy head an ornament of grace, and a crown of glory shall she deliver thee. Hear, O my son, receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. And I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in the right paths. When thou goest, thy steps shall not be straitened, or that's pressed in or hindered. And when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her. for she is thy life. Now notice here, the father's just showing what he lived and taught these children the right way. You know, I've said many times that I learned years ago, we were in a van, old van in a meeting, and I jumped out of this van and went to get something in the store. And I jumped out and a lady had thrown one of these pieces of plastic that they used to put ladies' stockings in on the parking lot. And I stepped out of there and stepped on that and it popped through the light and almost fell down. And so I turned around to pick it up. And just by the time I tried to pick it up, John, he was about 10 or 12, he stepped out, he stepped on it, popped, he almost fell on it. I said, John, get out of the way here. You're gonna hurt yourself, son. And so I got him out of the way. And then Scott, he stepped on it, he popped, and he went out. And then Matt, he little bitty fella, he crawled down, and he stepped on it. I thought, you know, I better watch where I'm putting my feet. My children are walking in my steps. I better watch what I'm doing. I'm going to tell you, if you want to raise your children right, you've got to live right. You can't just tell them what's right. You've got to show them and live before them so they can see what is right, so they can make decisions. And the writer's just showing here that they need to learn to exalt wisdom, see the value of it, and embrace her. Just here's somebody, have you ever seen young people that are crazy about each other? What do? Well, you have to pry them apart, don't you? That's a natural thing, isn't it? Somebody sees the value of somebody, they just want to be around them and embrace them. And hold fast to her. And I love this phrase, hold fast. It's the idea of gripping with a strong grip. And I've told people that years ago I learned a good value about this. As a boy, I used to break horses for a man. And the first day I went on the job, his daughter came out and got on the fence, and they had this big pony out there he wanted me to get on. He said, now, son, I'm going to put a bag on this horse's head, and I want you to get up on him. He said, I want you to get a death grip on him. Well, I saw that girl over there, and I thought, you know, I want to put on a pretty good show today. And so I got up there, and I was kind of sitting up there like I was ready to go. He said, son, are you ready? He said, you better get a death grip on that horse, son. He's going to hurt you. I said, oh, I'm ready to go. I thought it was going to be like Gene Autry or Roy Rogers or somebody, you know. And so he jerked the sack off that horse's head, and all I know is I couldn't breathe for a minute or two, and my mouth was full of dirt, and I heard her laughing over there. And I thought, what in the world? That horse just like to kill me. He pitched me up in the air, and I come down on my head. Well, I got up off that horse, and I took my boots off, and I said, let me try it one more time. And I got up on it, and I stuck my toes in the hinds of that horse's leg. I reached up under his neck, got a hold of that meat, and I said, let him go now. Well, he took off, and he bucked and jumped and kicked. And I didn't stay on the top. I was on the side most of the time. But I stayed right with him, you know. And so I knew that I had to get a death grip, because if you don't get a death grip on what this is about, let me tell you, life is going to throw you, and you're going to get hurt. And you're not going to be able to jump up and say, well, I wish I hadn't done it. Once you do something, there are consequences to go. Once you let some things go, you can't get them back. And that's why we're going to see as we go on the value of keeping yourself pure. Because you can't go back and get it once you throw it away. You've got to hold on to it. And so embrace her. Hold her fast. Because she is the supreme thing. And so here we just see that the writer's telling us we first need, as we go through life, to get a hold of wisdom and get a grip on it. And treat it like we love it, because it is the supreme thing. That's the thing we want to get. And the writer just takes this experiential insight as you live life. You become streetwise. You begin to see what's going on. You figure out what's going on in life. You know how to deal with people, how to talk to people. That's what the writer's trying to help us to see here. And so there are really just two paths that a person can travel in life. We either go down the road from the cradle to the grave. We go down the road, and there's only two roads you can take. And there are only two kind of travelers. One road's to darkness, one road's to light, one person's a fool, and the other one's a wise person. And so the Bible just makes it clear for us to see which way are we going to go here? Are we going to sit here and just blunder around and think we're going to make it? If we're not careful, we're going to be going to the dark. We need to decide and choose. We want to go the way that the light is. I want the light to get brighter. I want to see what life's about. And notice how emphatic the writer makes these statements in verses 14 through 15. He says, listen to how he states that again, if you will, or in verse 14. He says, enter not into the path of the wicked. Go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. How much more emphatic could it be, young people, for us to see that the writer's telling us that, well, one thing we've got to learn about life is the power of people that are wicked. We've got to stay away from people and from the pathway of people that are wicked and people that are bad. When you see somebody doesn't want to do right, they don't love God. I don't care how many muscles they got and how slick their hair is or how pretty their shiny their hair might be or the figure of their body. You stay away from people like that because they're only going to take you down the pathway that will get dark. Now, it might not, your emotions might not tell you that. Your feelings might not tell you that. But God tells you that's the way it is. And so be on guard, young people, to be careful because bad company and the people you choose to associate with have a great, they have a powerful influence on you. And you don't want to go where they go because if you go down the road they go down, you'll go down a road where trouble will come. And if you want your steps to be unhampered and be able to run, notice again the writer says there, if you will, in verse 12, when thou goest, thy steps shall not be straightened. That's the idea of being cramped or hindered or pressed in. And when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. You know, sometimes you have to, you walk through life and you want to be able to get that job done, or you live your life right, but sometimes you have to run. Sometimes you've got to make hasty decisions. You've got to do something that you haven't thought through. But if you've already planned and thought and lived this kind of life, sometimes when you have to make hasty decisions, you won't make a mess out of that either. You'll know how to do that. And so let's see the value and the importance and the significance, the power and the influence is so great. It's greater than we can imagine. Make sure that you choose godly people to associate with. Choose to run with good people. And I said, they'll get on your nerves. I tell people, I call some folks church chiggers. You know, when I see them coming toward me, I just start scratching. I know they're going to get under my skin some way, you know. Y'all know what chiggers are up here? I should. Okay. There are some people that are they're human chiggers, you know. They just get under your skin. But you've got to see, I've got to associate with people that are going to help me go to heaven, even though they get under my skin sometimes. People are going to do that. That's a part of what goes on in life. And so your direction, you see, will affect the light that comes into your life, whichever way you go. So choose. If you choose to control your environment and choose to choose good friends, what you'll find out is, and notice the writer shows us why we should choose these things and think about this, because the value and the benefits of being able to make decisions, go through life, and not stumbling around and fumbling around and making a mess out of your life as most people do. And so the writer just again showing us over and over. And then look at what he goes on to say here. Let me read down. I should have read verse 16. He talks here about the wicked and says, for they sleep not except they have done mischief. And they sleep. Their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness, and they drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is darkness, and they know not at what they stumble. Now, you think about that concept, and I've said, you know, we all know that light attracts things. You know, I tell people when I was a young boy, I'd go out in the country, I loved to catch snakes, and I'd get me a stick, and I'd turn rocks over, and if there was a snake there, you had to be quick, but every time you turn a rock over and that sunlight would shine where that darkness was, all the bugs would run to the dark. The bugs didn't like the light, and the snakes were the same way. You had to catch them quick. And I've said about going out in the barn early in the morning, I still had the lantern my grandpa and I carried to the barn to milk cows when I was a boy. And I'd walk in that barn and open the door. And when I'd open that barn door, you know what would happen? The first thing you would hear, you'd hear the rats and the snakes scratching to get to the dark. But when you hung that lantern up on a nail, all the camouflage, all the moths came to the light. You see, light draws certain things and light repels certain things. And here's a picture of people who determined to walk down through life. And notice the writer goes on to say in verse 20, my son, attain my words, incline thine ear unto my sayings. Let them not depart from thy ears. Keep them in the midst of thine heart, for they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And notice here, the Bible's telling you that your heart, good people, you've got to guard your heart. And because what happens is out of the heart, your life issues. Jesus said, the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. You know, you can listen to somebody talk. You can tell what, I've seen this all the time in people. Have you ever gotten around somebody who's a nut about baseball? You start talking to them about the gospel, and you know what you talk about in a few minutes? You're talking about baseball. And they're not embarrassed or ashamed. They're a nut. They're crazy about it. You can't get them off of it. And people get that into their mind. That's all them. And you know, if we could learn to do that with the gospel. You know, I've told about my cousin would come to the country from the big city, and I'd have to carry water up in the spring, and he'd come running at me a lot of times and run him trying to get me to spill that bucket or buckets of water. And when he'd run at me like that, I was glad to slosh it all over him, you know, because he was trying to get me to spill it anyway. But, you know, if you fill yourself up with the gospel and somebody runs into you, you know what's going to slosh out of you? The gospel's going to do that. And if we'll fill ourselves up, good people, with what God says and know what God says, people will have to put a harness on you to shut you up. That's the way that is. And people do it about everything under the sun, and we don't think they're crazy. But when we try to talk to them, I've told about one time picking up my dad's truck at the body shop, and there was a guy standing over on the other side over there in the shop, and I was over on this side, and he was kind of like me. Believe it or not, I'm shy. I know that's hard for you to imagine. But I was over here kind of looking at the corner, and I'd look at him, and he'd look at me like that, you know. And after a while, we kind of waved, and so then he just come over across the front of that building. He said, "Did you go to the car races last night?" I said, "No, sir, but did you go to church last Sunday?" He looked at me and he shot back over there and he just kept looking like I was a nut, like I was going to do something crazy. But you see, he was crazy about car racing. It just spilled out of him. But as soon as I spilled out something about God, he thought I was crazy. What's wrong with the world? You see, they think we're crazy because we're excited about the one thing that is important in life. And we're the people on the right track. And if you'll fill your heart up and guard your heart and protect your heart is like a safety deposit box. Have you ever thought about that? If you ever go to the bank and check out one of these little boxes, if I would go to the bank and check out a safety deposit box and put $20 in it and shut the door and lock it and go away and stay away from that box for 20, 30 years, and then all of a sudden a depression comes and I need some money and I go back to that box and stick the key in and open it up and open the door, what's in the box? What I put in the box. And that's the way your heart is. If you put good things in it, you'll think better, you'll look at life better, you'll be more positive, you'll be more cheerful and happy, and you'll feel better, you'll make better decisions, and you won't make a mess like everybody else is doing. We don't believe that's possible. But the Bible says if we guard our heart, that's exactly what happened because the issues of life come out of the heart. And then he says, put away from thee a forward mouth and perverse lips far from thee. You know, we need to use integrity when we talk to people and tell the truth. I've said a lot of times, all of us have been in situations. I remember years ago, my wife had made a dinner, and I came home from work, and I could sense that it was something I probably was not going to like, you know. And so I took a couple bites, and she had made, I'm sorry, but I cannot stand liver and onions. I have to stop and start on every animal somewhere, and liver's one of the places where I stop. And I took a couple bites of that, and I thought I was going to die. And so she said, "Well, how do you like it? How is it?" And I grabbed up my tea glass and took it in. "That's some of the sweetest tea. That's really good tea, you know." I didn't want to tell her the truth, you know. I didn't want to hurt her feelings. So I tried to find a way to be kind to her without telling a lie. I mean, if I'd lied, I'd probably got it again a couple nights later, you know. But we need to see that we need to learn to tell the truth. Just be honest with people. Learn to tell the truth with people. And people will value and appreciate who you are. But notice not only that, let thine eyes look right on and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. You know, this ideal of getting a focus on where you're going and watching where you're going. When I lived in the country and came to the city of Louisville, there was a fellow who went up down the alley years ago called the Junk Man. And he had a horse and he had these blinders on it like that because there was all this traffic running around Louisville. And he would drive around in that city traffic and had those blinders. And that old mule would just stand right there and just chew right there in the street and everything going on around. And it never bothered him. My buddy and I would get over there beside of him. We'd make faces, not crazy. And that old mule would just stand there and never would move, just looking straight on. And sometimes if we'd clap our hands and he'd look over and see, he'd jump and we'd jump, run, clear the fence and take off. But that old mule had his eyes fixed on where he was going. If you'll watch where you're going and make good goals and plans and look toward those goals, think about where your life is going, look out into the future about that, and make some good plans and fix your eyes on that. Don't just blunder around here as if you don't know what in the world you're doing or where you're going. Figure those things out and set your mind on that. Set your eyes on it. And then verse 26 says, ponder the path of thy feet and let all thy ways be established. We mentioned this word ponder. I've had that picture of the scale in many of these pictures. This is the ideal of putting things in a balance and weighing them out. Look at life and weigh it out and watch where you step. There's a lot of landmines, spiritual landmines you can step on. You can go out in one night and your whole life be changed by just going out one night. You can go out in one night and get AIDS. You can go out in one night somewhere and get involved in a party somewhere. And I tell you, I can tell you story after story of young men I talked to in the prisons and in jails, and even young women today who just went out and made one bad decision and it changed their entire life. And they could not go back and unravel what they'd done in one night. So make sure that you ponder the path of your feet. The writer's showing us here, here are the rules. How do you guard your heart and protect yourself? You've got to make sure that you watch what you let go into your heart. Put good things in there. Listen to the Bible. Read it. Get around people. Talk about it. Watch what you say. Watch how you use your tongue. Always tell the truth. And make sure your vision on life is set that you're going to do what God said. Set your vision on heaven. Set your mind in heaven where Jesus seated, the right hand of God, and seek those things that are above. Set your mind on that, Colossians 3 says, and seek those things. You know, I've told many times about years ago, somebody gave John, when he was a little fella, a magnifying glass, and he was out in the front yard, and I was sitting him in the office, and I got to thinking about him being out there with that magnifying glass. Somebody had showed him, if you take the sun rays and magnify them to a point, you can start a fire. And so I thought, I better check on that boy. I got up and looked out the window. Sure enough, he'd gathered a pile of leaves in the front yard, and he had that sun, and he had smoke coming up. And he was looking around smiling. Well, I pecked on the window. And I said, and he stuck that in his pocket and went like that, you know. So I sat back down and went to studying, and I thought, now, wait a minute. That boy's kin to me. I better check again. I looked out the window, and he had that thing focused on my car tar, and smoke was starting to come up over it. But he had learned the power. He learned the power of taking your energy and focusing it to a point and not running in every direction and just up and down and getting nothing done. We've got to figure out, good people, where we're finally going to go. Ponder the path of your feet and think about that. Well, where are your life's attitudes? Where are they going to take you? Your actions, where are they going to take you from here? Are we going to be able to see as we look at some of these statements what the Bible is showing us, that when we look at the wisdom of God and the wise dealings and the words that we say, the vision, the direction we have in life, are we going to get our hearts set right and get it set in the direction so when our life is finished, we're not going to get to the end and have our hands full of nothing and our eyes full of dirt. We're going to be ready for the day to come when the Lord comes. We'll have done what He said and prepared ourselves. And we've mentioned this already. The Bible shows there are two kinds of people in the world. There are only two kinds. That's what Jesus said. There are people who profess, they say, Lord, Lord, but they don't do what the Lord said. They practice iniquity, Jesus said. And then there are those who prove that they love the Lord because they hear what He says, and Jesus said they do that. And Jesus said those people are the wise people in the world. Now, which one are we going to be? Are we going to build our lives on the rock? That 7th chapter of Matthew is a defining message about who can go to heaven. It's the people who determine they're going to hear what God says, and they're going to do it. Don't start doing something until you hear what God says. We were talking to the young men yesterday about how this is not the eyes of faith. The Bible says we don't walk by sight. We walk by faith. You know where the eye of faith is? The eye of faith is on the side of your head. You've got to hear what God says first. You've got to listen to what God said. And when you listen to what God said and you do that, you'll be wise. If you hear it and you don't do it, you're going to be a fool. So what are you going to be? Are you going to be the kind of person that will listen to what God said? God drew the line in the sand. He's the one to determine what you need to do and what you need to be. What kind of person are you going to be? Are you going to do what He says? Are you here tonight? Never obeyed the gospel? You've never come to realize you need to confess your allegiance to Jesus? You need to be baptized so your sins can be washed away? Acts 22 and verse 16. The Bible tells us that baptism is an answer to a good conscience. Are you seeking a good conscience with God? Baptism will give that to you. You can find remission of sins if you come trusting in Jesus and put your confidence in Him as the Son of God and be willing to confess that tonight, change your will and do the will of God and be baptized so your sins can be washed away. I told the other day about me being kind of nutty when I went to the building to try to get the preacher to baptize me. And I'd already made my mind up. I knew that baptism, when I was raised up out of that water, I knew that all the ungodly things I had done were going to be washed away and God was not going to remember those against me anymore. And I decided, when that preacher brings me up out of the water and I catch my first breath, I'm going to shout hallelujah. I thought, that's what I'm going to do. And so I was back there talking to that preacher, and he was seeing I was pretty excited about it, you know. He said, now you better calm down. You're just a little too wound up here about all this. And so I thought, you know, these people already probably think I'm a nut. And so when I came up out of the water, I was so excited, but I didn't say a word. And I've regretted it to this day. You can come tonight, and your sins can be washed away. Heaven can be your home, but you've got to listen to God. Will you come and do that? Why don't you come when we sing the song?